30%. Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. And first, before we tell you what's coming up this hour, I want to thank you for all of your messages. I'll get back to you as soon as I can, but it's good I read them after I gave my announcement about retirement yesterday, because otherwise I just would have cried through the whole announcement. They've really touched me, and I've heard from people from high school and college and the man who hired me many years ago. Thank you all so much for all of your good wishes. I'll write back soon. This hour, some 30% of this year's 3 million graduating seniors will not go straight to college, and it's a number that's going up, our guest writes in the New York Times, as an improving economy draws more graduates directly to work. They'll go to Walmarts, to welding shops, restaurants, salons, hospitals, construction sites, to start careers on the tougher side of the vast economic and cultural divide that is demarcated by a college degree. It's a piece that was in the New York Times that caught our attention. Out of high school into real life, the graduation season, the New York Times talked with seniors across the country who are not headed to college about their plans, hopes, and dreams. The author of the article, Jack Healy, is our guest. He is the Rocky Mountain correspondent for the New York Times, and from 2010 to 2012, he was a correspondent in Baghdad for the Times. We'll be welcoming phone calls, and particularly interested because of what we're talking about in here. Hearing from those of you who maybe recently graduated from high school and you've decided not to go to college, or if you graduated from high school some time ago and didn't go to college, the reasons for that, we'd like to hear from you, and here's how you reach us. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. And Jack Healy, we welcome you to the program. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hey there. Thanks so much. And I guess congratulations.
Thank you,
like
Jack.
A, kind of a bittersweet moment. But
yeah.
Thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you. I'll be here for a little while longer, but then I'll be raising a dog. So life goes on in a different form. Yeah. You know, one of the things that struck me about these many poignant stories were how many people had a sense of responsibility to their families, that their moms may be working a couple jobs. Very few people in the family went on to college. And really, their work and their support was needed by their families.
Yeah, absolutely. If you look at studies that track the sort of paths of high school students after graduation, you know, one of the big factors is what your parents have done and sort of what they've, you know, their career and whether they went to school. And so for a lot of kids that I was talking to, you know, they fit that mold that, you know, mom or dad had either potentially like only done, you know, a couple of years and had dropped out or was working two, sometimes three full-time or part-time jobs. And these kids felt, some of them were in single-parent families, and they felt like they had to sort of be the adult and step up to fill in for, you know, the role of an absent parent or just to help make ends meet and almost like, you know, pass it on to their younger brothers and sisters, which is kind of amazing. This one young man I interviewed in Riverside, California, was, you know, he was 18 years old, and he was talking about his younger brother almost like he was the father. You know, parents always say, I want things to be better for the next generation or for my kids. And he was talking about his younger brother, who's maybe 4 years younger than him, and saying that he was willing to forego, you know, some potential economic opportunities so he could try to, you know, earn up money to allow his brother to not have to work through high school and be able to go on to college. So, yeah, it was a big factor for a lot of the kids I was talking to.
I can't remember what city he was from, but I was struck by Mason's story. Mason knew, it sounds like, from a very early age. His family was into cars. He was into cars. He's happiest when he's around cars. So why not do what makes you happy?
Yeah, exactly. So what we tried to do for this piece was talk to kids in different kinds of communities in different parts of the country. So the young man you're talking about, Mason, is from a tiny little town called Preston, Idaho, which is situated in the southern part of the state, just, you know, ringed by incredible mountains and rolling farm fields. Mason was one of a handful of kids I spoke with from that school who had just kind of grown up around family businesses, family farms, and they actually had a pretty good shot of economic stability because they're walking into very closely run, family operations that they'd grown up around, that there was a certain kind of sense of inheritance, expected with the kids. Mason's mom, was really supportive of his decision. But she was, when we talked in their living room, she was saying, well, I hope maybe he would take an accounting course at some point, but, that's kind of down the road. So, in his case, his parents sort of run this big auto auction business, and Mason's kind of starting in the ground floor of, learning the ropes of the business and washing and detailing cars and, getting them ready for sale. And so that's what he will be doing this summer and next year and on into his career until he, can step up and take over things sometime. Mm-hmm.
Jack, you say in the article some, and I think we don't really make note of this. We always talk about going on to college, but you remind us that some 30% of this year's 3 million graduating seniors will not go straight to college, and the number is going up as the economy gets better. It draws more graduates directly to work. How many of the young people you interviewed said, it's just way too expensive. I can't go into debt the way so many students are right now. I can't possibly do that.
Yeah, I mean, that was really a resounding theme with a lot of the students. I mean, for example, Mason and his family, doing pretty well financially. I mean, they've got, prosperous business. But for them, for Mason and also for his parents, it was this idea of taking on a lot of debt and spending, $10,000 or $20,000 a year for a college that just didn't seem like it was worth it to them. For other kids, there was this real sadness. They felt like they really wanted to go to school and they thought it would be worth an investment, but the financial constraints were just overwhelming. There's one young woman I talked to in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Her name is Evelyn, and she is an undocumented immigrant. She was brought over here when she was, I think, 6 or 7 years old. Mm-hmm. And she had, a lot of opportunities. She's like a really artistic kid and had a lot of opportunities to go on to schools. But for her, the issue was her undocumented status put a lot of federal student aid, basically all federal student aid, out of reach. And so, she didn't have a huge, sort of family support network when it came to, figuring out other ways to do college. And so she's going to, be working as probably a receptionist at a salon and sort of trying to figure out her next steps. In her case, she had, some decent support from school, but, her mom, works a factory job and her brother works a factory job after having graduated a couple years earlier. And so, yeah, for some of these kids, it was also just like a desire not to take on debt. Some of them wanted to work to save up money to, be able to pay for college down the line. But that can be hard when you're, sure, working an entry-level job and potentially, supporting your family or trying to support yourself and just pay the bills.
Ironically, she said that if she were in Mexico, that it's harder to live in America. She said if she were in Mexico, she could have gone to college because she would have had financial aid.
Yeah. It's kind of one of the really poignant ironies of families who come to the United States from Mexico or Central America looking for a better life, right?
And so many of these young people, there's another one whose name I can't remember right now, whose mother was working 3 jobs, I think, just to have the ends meet in the family, and she had to get up at 5 in the morning to take care of her young sister and work jobs herself. Life is tough for so many people, really tough.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of these kids are really growing up, pretty fast and pretty quick. I mean, there was this, I don't know how long it's been since you, if you went to school or how long it's been, but
it's been a long time. Yeah.
I mean, I think for a lot of people who go to school, it serves as a real bridge to adulthood. And it's maybe only when you've gotten out of college that you realize how much maybe you needed 4 years to sort of incubate and, right. and to try to grow into someone who can make financial decisions that are responsible or act responsibly for, you know, personally. I mean, you do a lot of dumb stuff, you know, during those 4 years, and you make a lot of dumb mistakes. And a lot of these students were really kind of like jumping into roles where they were almost just kind of, you know, joining a what felt like a much older generation.
Do the boys, at one point in the article, you talk about boys dominating the higher paying fields like welding, electronics, pipe fitting, and plumbing. Girls make up most of the students in lower paying fields. Did you find that was true from the students you talked to, that many of the boys were going into higher paying fields?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not universal, but yeah, studies have suggested that like the vocational tech programs that exist are still, you know, very much kind of, you know, they still align to sort of, you know, very traditional gender roles. And I think schools across the country are looking at what manufacturers and businesses are citing as like a huge need for skilled workers in things like HVAC or welding, electrical work, you know, just sort of, you know, trade labor, which I think in many, many cases pays, you know, very, very well starting right out of school after an apprenticeship or something like that. And schools are, you know, working with local businesses and trying to, you know, get these program and community college to get these programs running and to give students an option other than just working at a fast food restaurant. But with a lot of the students I talked to when I would go chat with, you know, vocational ed people, it was almost always the case that, you know, the cosmetology programs were largely, you know, made up of girls, and the, you know, the welding or construction programs were largely dominated by guys. And that's not always the case, but, you know, some researchers have said that schools just need to be doing more to try to, you know, bring more girls into the programs that, you know, that tend to lead to better paying careers in the trades.
So let's talk about the money differences here, because I wonder how significant they are, considering how many young people, if you don't come from a wealthy family, you're saddled with debt for a long period of time. I think the figure is, what, $30,000 median income for those who have a high school education, $50,000 if you have a college education. But does that take into account all the debt you may have?
No, that doesn't. You know, and it gets complicated, too, because, you know, one of the reasons that some students were reluctant to go into school is that they worried about the very real possibility of dropping out. I mean, there are, I think the completion rate for cohorts of kids entering 4-year degree programs is something like 55% after 6 years, which is a pretty large number of students who go and, you know, take on debt or take on loans and then don't graduate
Yes.
with the degree. You know, and so a lot of students were really, it wasn't just, you know, the fear of graduating with a degree and a whole lot of debt and having to pay that off, but it was concerns about like, well, what if I can only afford this for a couple of years and then I don't make it, and then I'll have spent all this money and not have a degree on top of it and won't have been working in the intervening time. So these were really difficult financial decisions, and really adult financial decisions that are being made by, you know, 17 and 18-year-olds, just kind of on the cusp of starting adulthood life.
Many of the parents of the students that you interviewed had not gone to college. Did they want their children to go on to college or not?
Yeah, I mean, I think what these parents wanted just was for their kids to find the best possible fit within the sort of constraints of the family economics. Like for this one family I talked with in Idaho Falls, Idaho, their son had these kinds of dreams of going to a small private liberal arts school down in Salt Lake City and studying theater. But the family had a lot of real financial difficulties stemming from the kid's name is Ty. Ty's father had some, you know, real serious medical problems, you know, brain tumor and things like that had incapacitated them and prevented him from working. And so there were some real constraints. And so the family was trying to figure out sort of, well, you know, what can we do that's best for Ty? But we also have to think about, you know, the very real limits of our own finances and our savings and how much money we can, you know, help him out with. I mean, for some of the kids I spoke with, there was a little bit of a rift between their parents and them. like this one young woman in Indiana I talked to, her mom, you know, did go to college and did, you know, is working in a sort of a professional white collar field. And there had been some tension about the fact that her daughter wasn't going to go to school, and was going to instead, you know, work three, you know, pretty low paying hourly jobs as she, you know, tried to establish herself independently and get out of the house. And, you know, for the daughter, it was just really important to start sort of being kind of like a quote unquote real adult. And mom was pushing her to go to college. So there are those tensions at some points.
And what about the daughter who was offered soccer scholarships? She was a great soccer player and she instead decided to join the Marines. Was her mom unhappy or proud?
Her parents are really proud of her. I think it took them, this is a young woman named Carolyn Gonzalez, who is you know, pretty remarkable. She decided that she, what she said to me was, I would be the first person in my family to go to college, but I would also be the first person in my family to become a Marine.
Uh-huh.
I mean, she, I think like a lot of other recruits, she was looking for something more than, you know, a four-year degree. She was looking for her, you know, a certain sense of personal growth and like personal maturity that she found within, you know, military service. So her parents both work in a turkey processing plant in near the Ohio-Indiana border, and Carolyn told me that her mom cried a little bit when she told her that she wanted to be a Marine, and her father was very wary. But I think that they sort of saw some of the changes in her as she started to go to some of the training sessions and like the preparatory stuff that the local recruitment center offered. You know, she said that her parents had sort of grown to be incredibly proud of her, and to see her almost as a role model for them and for her older siblings. Mm-hmm. So that was a really touching story.
Yes, it was. I would imagine most of them are. Jack, for those who decide this year off between high school and college seems to be becoming a more popular idea, if you take a year off, want to save money or want to figure out what you want to do with your life, are you likely to not go to college at all? Are there statistics on that?
I mean, what the high school counselors I talked to about, you know, the gap year, right, is becoming more and more popular. What the counselors that I was talking to said is that, you know, they really just wanted students to sort of have a plan, that it was going to be a year off to do something really specific, whether it was to sort of travel or to do volunteer work with an organized group or something of that nature. But what can sometimes happen is, you know, scholarships can lapse and certain, you know, financial aid, you know, that's once offered can go away after a period of time. And students can lose that sort of network of support that they have from, you know, their high schools, you know, the advisors and the counselors that are sort of, you know, trying to route them onto a, you know, particular path. And so I think what the college counselors that I talked to were most concerned with were the kids who weren't sort of taking, you know, the traditional gap year, but the kids who were sort of thinking, well, you know, maybe I'll take a couple of years and then go. You know, those, you know, the more kind of gauzy and hazy the plans were, the more concerned they were that, you know, it would lead to students sort of drifting away from, you know, from their goals and their aims, you know, as life kind of got in the way.
Mm. We'll go to phone calls in a moment. I just want to ask you a question that kind of goes into what we're talking about the second hour of the show. Joan Williams, who has written the book White Working Class, it's really an interesting analysis of the white working class. One of her chapters talks about people who are in the working class, many of them you interviewed who are graduating from high school for your piece, having a much stronger sense of place, of community, of home, of family ties and grandparents living down the street, and the elites in the country, well, go fly, go to California, go wherever you want to go, where the job is best, and you're going to make the most money, and those ties perhaps of community and family are not quite as strong as they have been traditionally in working class families. Did you find any of that, people who just wanted to stay closer to home?
Yeah. I mean, there was a kid in Idaho, Andy, who I interviewed. He didn't get quoted in the piece, but, you know, for example, he grew up on on a sort of dryland alfalfa in grain farm, and he really felt like a lot of his classmates from the little town where he grew up were, you know, heading off to schools in Utah or schools in Boise, you know, medium to large colleges. But for him, he really felt rooted to the community where he grew up, and he had no interest in leaving, and really wanted to commit to that. To that place. And, it, you know, it was really interesting to talk to students about that kind of thing, because I think a lot of 18-year-olds want to kind of get out and explore the world.
Right.
You know? Yeah. And often, you know, a lot of them don't come back to small towns. You know, that's kind of one of the challenges that rural communities across this country face. You know, we talk about, you know, the difficulties facing small towns. You know, most small town mayors will tell you that they're, you know, facing issues with brain drain, and so the sort of best and brightest going off to big cities and taking all of their inspiration and their kind of like, you know, economic power out of their towns. You know, but for some of these, the kids who I was talking with, they really loved, you know, a lot about the smaller communities where they had grown up, and they wanted to really participate in them and be a part of them.
Jack Healy is our guest this hour. He's the Rocky Mountain correspondent for the New York Times, and he wrote a very interesting piece, Out of High School into Real Life. This graduation season, the New York Times talked with seniors across the country who are not headed to college about their plans, hopes, and dreams. Jack's going to hear from a lot of you as we continue with our show this hour. We're welcoming your phone calls. I'm interested in hearing from many of you who decided not to go to college for whatever reason, and you can explain what that is. Is the job market good enough that you can find jobs that pay well? Was money a consideration in not going to college? Do you think we put too much emphasis on people going to college because you'll make more money in your lives? But will you make more money in your lives if you've got this huge student debt? Does college not seem attractive to a lot of people for many good reasons? And what might those reasons be? We would like to hear from you. And here is how you reach us, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we are on Twitter at K Dunn Show. All right, let's go to your phone calls. Nick in Eagle River is our first caller for you, Jack. Hello, Nick.
I'm kind of disillusioned by college. I didn't go to college. I made it out of high school. I got my job, the union job. I make a decent wage. The only good thing about college was that's how I met my wife. She's in my town. But the thing is, she went to college. She's very intelligent. She's got 2 or 3 degrees. She can't find a job. I'm paying her student loans. So basically, I didn't get to go to college, but I get to pay her student loans. And
oh, goodness.
She was working for a nonprofit, but when we had kids, it just, with daycare and stuff, it didn't make sense to have her go and work at the nonprofit that she was working at, because she was basically working for daycare.
Uh-huh.
So, I'm kind of on the fence now. Do I want my kids to go to college or not? Because I was always brought up, you go to college, it's the American dream, you get a decent job, and life is great after that, and it's not that way. Like I said, I didn't get to go to college, and I'm making, when she was working, I was making twice as much as she was.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Nick, was it hard to find a union job?
No, not for me, no. I had a bunch of friends that worked here, and I deliver construction, and I got hired immediately. It was easy.
But how old are your kids, Nick?
That, you know, that's the American dream. You go to college, you get a decent job.
Right, yeah. Say it again, Jack. I don't know if he heard you.
Yeah. Nick, how old are your kids? How close do you guys are to sort of figuring these things out with them?
Well, we tried to have kids, and we lost 6 of them. So my kids are kind of young now. I've got a 2-year-old, I've got a 7-year-old. And I've got an 8-year-old. And the thing is, like I said, my wife is very intelligent. And it's actually trickled down to my daughter. My daughter's in 3rd grade. She's ringing at 6th grade level. Her math is 6th grade. So, I mean, it's not that my wife is dumb or anything. It's just the career that she chose wasn't profitable.
It's hard to know where in the world college is going to be when Nick's children are grown up, isn't it, Jack?
Yeah, or how much it's going to cost.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's, Nick, you know, you know, so you've got like such a sharp daughter. Have you guys started to look at, you know, like college savings accounts or you know, sort of what tuition costs are looking like and, you know, that kind of thing? Or
I haven't yet. The thing is, we still owe $20,000.
Oh, my.
Wow.
and I'm still paying for it, that she's not working. I mean, and like I said, it's not worth her to go to maybe daycare. It's outrageous.
Right. No. It sure is. Yeah. Still paying $20,000. Ooh, that's tough, Jack, isn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, and Nick makes a really great point, which is that there's a real demand in this country for skilled trade jobs and for, you know, jobs like he does that, you know, pay really well. And, you know, you do hear a lot of stories like that. You know, I have a master's degree and I haven't been able to find work in this field. You know, if you look at the whole sort of national statistics and you average it out over this big country of, you know, 300 plus million people, you know, it still does pay overall to have a degree, but you know, versus not having a degree. But this is the real fear that a lot of the students I was talking to, you know, wanted to avoid is not to be able to support themselves, but also to face this mountain of debt. And, you know, student loans are incredibly difficult, you know, to discharge through any kind of bankruptcy or things like that. If you just find yourself in real financial peril. They're really, you know, with you forever, as you guys know, Nick.
Thanks, Nick, so much for your call. Vaughn in Richland Center. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to relate my own personal story. I'm 27 years old. I never went to college. I took a few courses, but never got a degree or anything. And I guess I discovered that, you know, going to college is almost more of a leap of faith than not, and it's risky either way, because, you know, if you go to college, then you have going to be debt, and that's the main reason why I didn't do it. But at the same time, if you don't, then what do you do with your life? And, you know, I ended up getting into food service, and I'm a delivery driver, and I might be getting an office job based on my experience in that field, and that could be my career for the rest of my life. So, you know, it's a leap of faith either way, and I guess I do have some regrets about not going to college, but at the same time, I don't have any debt, and I could still go to college if I want to, so.
And the work is okay? Are you happy enough with it, Vaughn?
What was that?
The work, is your work okay for
you? Yeah, no, it's rewarding, and, you know, I enjoy the people I work with, and that's great, but you know, maybe if I'd gone to college for music or theater or something, I'd be doing that instead. And it's just, you know, I'd make that decision when I was 18 or 19 and say, hey, I don't want to be paying down $30,000, $40,000 a year like my parents.
Right.
So that's all I had to say.
Thank you. I'm glad you called, Jack.
Thanks, Vaughn. That's really interesting. Is he still with us? Or?
Are you still with us, Vaughn?
Yes, I am.
Good. Okay.
Hey, Vaughn, could you mind if I just ask you? Like, I don't know. I mean, it sounds like you're doing pretty well. If you've ever looked around for other careers or, you know, other jobs, do you often find that the sort of like minimum requirements, you know, like list a degree or something like that? I mean, is that a barrier to you, you know, switching work or looking for other kinds of, you know, employment, you know, maybe in more of like a white collar setting?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I thought about getting, I'm pretty good at writing, so I thought about getting into being like a freelance editor or something, and, you know, looked on a few job listings and they're all like, well, you probably should have a degree. And I was like, yeah, that makes sense. But the trade-off is, you know, if you think you're charming enough and get, you know, able to get to know the right people, then it really doesn't matter if you have a degree, because, you know, you can prove to the people around you your skills without having to just throw them a degree or a name of a school that you went to.
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, you know, I think one of the things that one of the unfortunate things that this sort of divide between having a college degree and not is has created is this idea that education is somehow the same as intelligence, and that's you know, really not the case.
No,
you know, in this country, that, you know, there are, you know, I mean, you know, millions of incredibly smart people, you know, in this country who have, you know, haven't, you know, gone to a lick of college, and that the skills that they have are, you know, really just as essential, if not more so, than the skills of a lot of people who do have that Bachelor of Arts degree.
Do you mind if I ask you, Jack, did you go to college, and did you go right away out of high school?
Yeah, I did. I went to the University of Missouri.
Oh, you did? Great.
And yeah, I went to journalism school there. Uh-huh. And so I got a bachelor's in 2003, and that's sort of the limit of my education.
Uh-huh. Thank you very much, Vaughn, for your call. We go to Casey in Rice Lake next. Hi, Casey.
Hello. I just wanted to say I did get a college degree in speech and language pathology. And what I kind of feel about college a little bit is that I wish I could have taken more classes that were applicable to my major rather than so many electives and generals. It was really expensive to take those classes, and I really would have been better off and better prepared if I would have been able to take more classes in the areas of my major. And so I kind of found that kind of frustrating with college, that it's a lot of years and a lot of time and a lot of expense when you're taking electives in general. But I kind of believe the vocational school way of thinking of it tends in an area of what your vocation is going to be.
Yeah, that's an interesting mm-hmm. thought.
Yeah, there are, I think, a growing number of people these days who see, you know, that as a real stumbling block, Casey. And I think what they do is they'll try to do, you know, a lot of their general ed stuff at a community college level where it's a little bit more affordable or it's entirely free in some cases, or even they'll try to knock them out in high school if their local schools have partnerships with community colleges, and then they'll transfer to a four-year school that has and just sort of their focus on those kinds of things, you know, rather than, you know, paying those high prices for the dorms and things of that nature when, you know, they're just going through, you know, some, you know, very basic, you know, composition 101 kind of stuff that isn't exactly within, you know, the realm of what they're going to be doing.
Hmm. I wonder if any colleges are thinking about what Casey has said, because if you have an area like speech pathology, which is a lot of science study and language study, and you'll be using it in schools or wherever that service is needed, which is many places, you could get through school a lot quicker. Most people are taking 5 years now, which is a whole lot of money. Does it make sense for colleges to look at maybe a three-year program to be a speech pathologist or a three-year program to be just about anything and cut out some of the, I know liberal arts, and I loved liberal arts, but I love going to school and taking, that's why I do talk radio. I've gone to school for years now. But to be able to cut off some of the years, should they look at that? Jack?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question.
Yeah, I wonder.
Casey, is she still online?
She's here.
I'm still there.
Okay.
Yep.
Do you work within speech pathology? Like, are you using your degree, you know, on a day-to-day basis?
I'm retired now. I did use my degree, and it was a high demand degree when I graduated. So that was excellent. Financial aid was really generous, and I did not have a lot of debt when I graduated. A master's degree is required with a speech pathology bachelor's degree to get a job, but that worked out okay for me. But my concern is more with my children now. They have enormous college debt, and it's true, they did do youth options in high school. Unfortunately, because I was in the school, I knew about youth options and was able to guide my girls into taking courses at the local community college. However, that is not very broadcast, and a lot of parents did not know about that because the school district is required to pay for those community college classes if they don't offer them within the curriculum in the high school. So that did help my girls, but it broke my heart when they would have to take classes, and they both went to UW-Madison, just kind of to fill in their schedule, and so an enormous amount of expense for environmental, studies or geography or something that they really weren't going to use, and but just filling their schedule to get within the categories of general electives that they needed.
Right.
Frustrating. That's really interesting.
Yeah, it's a very interesting point.
Are they out of school now, or where are they in the whole process?
Yes. One is working in Milwaukee, and the other is just graduated. Yes.
Okay. Well, look, that's great for them. I'm one of the things about the amount of student debt that students have these days is sort of people talk about sort of being forced into making, you know, a lot more hard decisions. Like, well, I can't, you know, buy that house because of all this debt, or I can't, you know, get married right now because of all this debt, or things of that nature. I mean, do you talk to them much about sort of how they are sort of planning out their lives, you know, around, you know, the big you know, lumps of student loans that they're going to have to pay off?
Well, this was kind of funny. My oldest daughter married a computer science software engineer, and so he's got a pretty good job in Milwaukee. And she was able to get a pretty good job, too. And so they did buy a house, and they're really doing okay, and I think they are kind of planning out. My younger daughter is in communications and is concerned about the job market and the student debt and all those kinds of things, how that's going to work out for her. She's just starting her journey, but hopefully, because like I said, I came out and financial aid was generous, and I'm grateful. I would not have been able to afford an education because I grew up in Burnett County and my dad was a sand poor farmer, and thankfully, you know, there were financial aid and government loans available for me to advance myself and to provide to others in the community in a helpful way. And it really is difficult to see the student debt and just sort of how college is arranged now, like I said, with, you know, the requirements and thinking, right. You know, if you're in an area that it would be greater to emphasize that than take some electives that really don't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. And school costs so much more now, too. Casey, thanks for the call. We really do have this divide, and it governs what people decide to do with their lives, too, I think, Jack. One of the things that's happening in so many industries is unpaid internships. Everybody's using interns, and they don't get paid for anything. And if you can do one of those because your family can afford to let you do one of those, that cuts out a whole lot of people. You have a leg up, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, in many cases, yeah, absolutely. And the students who can't, you know, just afford to spend a summer working for free and also paying for their own apartment in some, you know, new city are at a real disadvantage when it comes to that.
Right.
You know, I think it's one of the reasons there have been a handful of, you know, lawsuits challenging, you know, whether places should, you know, be able to have unpaid interns and whether that violates labor laws.
Jack Healy, our guest, and he's a reporter for the New York Times. He's the Rocky Mountain correspondent. Spent a couple of years in Baghdad from 2010 to 2012. The piece is Out of High School into Real Life. For this graduation season, the New York Times went to various places in the country to talk to young people and their families who are not going to college to find out why and whether or not they're thinking about it at some point. What are the drawbacks? Some of them have chosen not to go because they've chosen other paths in life. And that's what we're talking about. And welcoming your calls. 800-486-8655 is the number. This is the Ideas Network. All right, let's go back to phone calls. Kevin is next in Crandon. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Kathleen. First question. He said that 30% aren't going on to college, which I guess that means 70% are. What percentage of those are actually graduating with a degree? Two, when are the upper middle class elites going to understand that everybody is just not capable of college or interested or, you know, have the money for it? And a quick statement is, when I graduated high school 35 years ago, it was the height of the Reagan recession, and if I wanted a roof over my head and be able to eat, I had to go out and get a real job right now, which I did. Went 6 months after high school, I was hanging sides of beef in a slaughterhouse for $4.75 an hour. So, that's real life.
What are you doing now, Kevin?
Well, after I did that for 5 years, I went into heavy-duty construction laboring, and after various injuries and such, I'm one of those horrible people on disability now.
Mm. Oh, you're not a horrible person by any stretch of the imagination, but there are jobs and that are tough jobs for people. There are certain kinds of labor that you could do that you have to do for your life, and you may love it, but it's going to wear your body down, Jack.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Hey, Kevin, in response to your question, the numbers kind of vary year to year, but I think Pew had a survey that suggested that about 55% of students will get a degree within 6 years. You know, which is a lot who do not graduate with a college degree, and you know that's obviously a big concern both for educational institutions and the kids who are taking on debt and spending all that money on tuition.
Right. And what is the figure? I think I read this somewhere in the last couple of days that I always thought that more people in this country had college degrees, but I think it's only 33% or something like that, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. That's I think, and that's the entirety of the population, and that sort of reflects the fact that college, which was once sort of something for the minority of people, has now become something for the the overwhelming majority of students. And that's why we were kind of curious to talk to people who are who are sort of 17 or 18 years old in this time when it seems like such a natural pathway, after high school, to see what it sort of felt like to go against the grain. And take jobs. Kevin, I talked to a bunch of students who are, heading off into construction jobs and who are going to be, pouring concrete and, putting up beams and stuff like that. And that's real work. These are 18-year-old kids who, can, do that kind of work 12, 16 hours a day and, get up and do it again the next day. And they love it. But I mean, you probably can tell them as well as anybody that, it changes, after 20 years on the job.
Sure.
and your body starts to feel a lot different, when you're doing it when you're 40 than when you're 20.
Mm-hmm. Tony in Egg Harbor, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. I was real fortunate. I graduated high school in 1974, and I was deathly afraid to take the ACT test, so therefore I never did. And I went to a 9-month vocational education program to learn heating and air conditioning.
Oh.
And since then, I've been self-employed for 37 years. I've remediated contaminated soil. I started frozen yogurt businesses.
Goodness.
And I just had to figure it out.
Right.
And I think, the university system, calling them into question is a little short-sighted, because for me, you have to really call the entire educational matrix into question, because if you want to discourage a kid, give him a test and tell him he failed. And then just keep doing that enough times until the kid says, I'm not going to take the test anymore, because that's the only way I'm going to be able to stop failing. And they still tell kids, if he would just apply himself, he would do better. So I think the entire educational system has created a society of obedient factory workers, and it's discouraged people from figuring things out on their own. And I always go to the story of Pokemon, which was a big card game in the 90s, where kids were figuring this stuff out. It is a very sophisticated multi-level strategy game that they never took 1 minute of formal education in it, and they taught themselves. And I think education is a big scam.
Mm. Well, I'm glad you figured out a lot of things for yourself, but it sounds scary to me, just as you were scared of the ACT. I think a lot of people, Jack, are scared of having to figure things out for themselves. That's not easy.
Yeah, certainly not. I mean, and I think that's that's one of the appeals of the degree for a lot of students who aren't quite sure, or maybe who don't have the same kind of entrepreneurial genius that Tony does. Is sort of the it's like, well, at least this is kind of an entryway into or likely going to be an entryway into a stable career.
Thank you so much, Tony. Great to have your call. Let's go to Nick in Blue Mound. Hi, Nick.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi. I had a comment on this. My wife, she went to a 4-year degree. She took a year off and worked at Subway for a year to save up some money for it, and took a 2-year college to get her associate's, and then transferred to get her biology degree. And she came out, and it was very difficult for her to actually find a job. She's since found one, but she's looking for new employment, and she just is having a heck of a time finding anything, really, and just getting callbacks. She's a straight-A student, and it's just kind of frustrating that, you know, she's got this four-year degree, just really smart, and it's very difficult for her. Myself, I mean, I didn't go to, you know, a four-year degree. I just went to welding, and then I did another certificate. And for me, finding employment was not so much an issue. It just frustrating, you know, that it's so difficult sometimes for someone with a four-year degree to spend all that money and feel like you're not getting anywhere.
What does she want to do, Nick?
That's the problem. She doesn't really want to know, honestly. She likes animals, but she can't find a foot in the door anywhere, really.
Jack.
I'm sorry to hear that, Nick. I think that you talk to people across the country from all ages, and I think that there is this just sense of the economy not fitting with a lot of people's kind of desires or qualifications at this moment. I mean, even as we, you know, kind of get, you know, approach full employment levels in a national picture, you just talk to people who are sort of, you know, struggling with this and who are sort of, you know, having trouble finding, you know, sort of that good paying stable career. I mean, I think that you saw a lot of anxiety over this in 2016, and you're going to, you know, continue to see it as the economy kind of continues to change.
Hope she finds something, Nick, and thank you very much for your call. Tracy, Green Bay, hi.
Hi. Boy, I had one comment, and then I've heard so many other things since I've been on hold. My first comment was in sort of reaction to the woman who was talking about these extraneous electives that you have to take. And while I understand that adds to the cost, I'm a graduate of UW and double majored. But my point is that those electives are required to have a more well-rounded education, to be that much better prepared to be successful in the real world after graduation. And I don't know that trading that in for a lower bill at the end is such a great idea for us. We're already falling behind China and how many other countries in education and success. I just don't know that it's a good idea to just throw that all the wayside because it costs too much. I think what we ought to be talking about is how much education is costing all of us and what we can do about that.
Interesting point, Jack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you know, the cost of education, I mean, it's that, you know, do you have another 3 hours to talk about this?
Yeah.
The debt loads that students are facing, they're stickier and more difficult to deal with than ever. If you hit, you know, real rough financial patches, it's one of the factors that students were just staring down like the barrel of a gun. And a lot of them were so intimidated by, you know, the idea of, you know, $30,000 a year, you know, which is, you know, maybe as much as their parents made in a year. You know, taking on, you know, that kind of debt for 4 years and for, you know, nobody guarantees you a degree, you know, at the end of nobody guarantees you a job at the end of all that. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a scary thing to look at when you're that young.
Thank you, Tracy. Let's go to, I hope we can take two more calls. Brittany in Clover Leaf Lake. Hi.
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 Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that, like, when I was 18 years old, I was not ready to go to college right away. I traveled, I had fun. And on top of that, my parents made too much money for me to qualify for financial aid. So even though I was living on my own, I couldn't get any financial help. They didn't make enough money to help me with school, but I didn't qualify for financial aid either. Now I'm 28 years old. I have a 2-year-old. I'm back in school. I take school so much more seriously now. It's, like, really important to me. But it is also still hard, like, with childcare and stuff.
Sure.
Luckily, I have my dad, who works as a teacher, and my boyfriend's mom, who works in the school system also. So, like, I took last semester off of school. Now I'm back in it for summer classes, and they watch my son during the summer for free, which is awesome. But I'm already trying to figure out next semester what I'm going to do with him because childcare is just crazy expensive. But I think basically a lot of people aren't ready for college right away at 18.
I think you're right. Look at what happens to a lot of us who go to college when we all do. Oh, I got freedom. I'm going to eat a lot of ice cream or drink too much alcohol or not study very much, you know.
Yeah.
You wonder what we're doing. Jack, we're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us. You really sparked a nerve here, and we had some great calls, and that's because you wrote the article, so we could talk about it.
Yeah, these are great callers. Yeah, they're fantastic.
Thank you. Thanks, Jack. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much. It was great.
Jack Healy is the Rocky Mountain correspondent for the New York Times, and he went to Mizzou and became a journalist right out of college. He also spent time in Baghdad, which was quite an assignment, from 2010 to 2012. The piece we've put on our Facebook page, Out of High School into Real Life. Thanks to Gretchen Brown for producing this interesting show, and to Gretchen as well for on-air production.